Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Hi, everyone. It's Kendall.
And Josh from Mile Higher Media.
And as most of you guys know, last September, we launched our foundation, the Higher Hope Foundation. And honestly, it's been pleasantly surprising how much we have been able to do in our first year, thanks to all of you. The amount of grants that we have been able to offer to victims, families of victims, as well as similar-minded nonprofits in the advocacy space. It's just been an amazing first year.
Yeah, we just wanted to thank you so much for all of your support out there, whether you've given a donation, whether you've purchased merch, which again, all merchandise at milehighmerch.com, 100% of proceeds goes to the Higher Hope Foundation. So that's been absolutely huge for the foundation since we've made that change. But also just by viewing our content, listening to our content, or supporting any of our sponsors, all of that goes into funding the grants that the Higher Hope Foundation is able to give.
And so far in 2025, we've disbursed over $210,000 in grants, scholarships, and projects, and we've also processed over 25 grants.
And right now, we are in our season of giving, and we're only $40,000 shy of reaching our full impact goal. So obviously, we'd love to meet this goal, and we intend to meet this goal. Closing this gap means helping 8 more families or organizations that are still waiting for the help that they deserve.
And so every gift, no matter the size, and by the way, every single cent that you donate goes directly to grants, 100% of that. And every little bit of it makes a huge difference for us and will help people who are still waiting.
And during our season of giving, we are going to be matching every dollar up to $50,000 of donations that are made during this time. And if we reach our goal, we'll also reach our year-end impact goal, which will be huge for the foundation and huge for all of those out there who need help.
Yeah, and it will allow us to start 2026 strong.
You can get involved directly and place a donation over at higherhope.org/donate, or you can start your own fundraiser and get your family, your friends, your coworkers involved over at higherhope.org/get involved.
Thank you and happy holidays.
Light out, everybody.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Lights Out, baby. I'm your host, Josh.
And I'm your host, Austin.
And I'm the producer, Daniel.
And we got a case for you today that's going to blow your mind and disturb you beyond anything you ever thought was possible.
Yeah, I know we maybe say this a lot. I don't think we've ever anything quite like this.
This one's bizarre on a whole other level and just gross.
Yeah.
It's just kind of grimy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a weird one because this woman, Sharon Lapatka, she, according to some, consented to her own murder, which we'll explain, obviously, what we mean by that. And it's kind of a wild rabbit hole we fall into, full of gut-wrenching fetishes and brutal sexual violence to go along with it. It's kind of a weird story because this woman, by all accounts of people who knew her, that grew up with her, family, friends, she just seemed like a completely typical, you know, middle-aged woman doing the normal jobs, kind of going through life, just as everybody else does.
Yeah.
And then this thing comes along called the internet.
Yeah.
And in the early days, I mean, I mean, this was before, we were still kids when this all happened, the 90s, early 90s, and I mean, it was kind of a wild place.
Yeah, up until, I want to say like, I don't know, up until the 2010s, the internet was pretty just, it was the Wild West.
So she kind of falls down into, you know, some of these dark, dark places of the internet and starts getting into contact with some other very strange, weird people.
Yeah.
Things just kind of spiral out of control with this. But it is one of the few cases where the question itself of did she consent to her own murder actually comes up and is kind of up for debate a little bit.
Right.
But as we'll see later on, maybe not so much. So yeah, definitely a weird one. We have not covered a case like this before on Lights Out, so let's get into it, shall we? Sharon Lopatka, she was actually born Sharon Rena Denberg. Lopatka was her married name, but she was born with the last name Denberg, and she was born in Baltimore, Maryland on September 20th, 1961. She was the oldest of four daughters, and her parents were Abraham and Beth Denberg. Both of her parents were fairly strict and pretty devoted to their faith. They were very much involved in their Orthodox Jewish community. And her father, Abraham, was a cantor for 3 decades at their synagogue, the Beth Tefillo Congregation. And this was Baltimore's largest Orthodox Jewish community, and Sharon grew up 200 feet away from her synagogue. Sharon's classmate, Steve Hyman, said, "She wasn't an outcast or anything. She was about as normal as you can get. She played volleyball and field hockey. She worked in the school's theater productions and participated in the school's choir club. She also worked as a nurse's aide and a teacher's aide. She had a lot of motivation early on and would jump at the chance to participate in anything and everything. And it's been suggested that this was also her way of staying out of the home for as much time as possible, just keeping herself busy with all these different activities. And as she got older, there were certain expectations of her that came from her parents and their Orthodox religion. It was expected that Sharon would grow up to marry a Jewish man and stick to the conventional rules of overseeing the home and the family. While she always kept the Sabbath when living at home with her parents, she also had a rebellious side to her. Her friends described her as a free spirit. She went on to graduate from Pikesville High School in 1979, and at age 29, she went on to marry a Catholic construction worker from Ellicott City, Victor Lopatka, in 1991. And he was described by the News and Observer as handsome and fit. After the wedding, they moved to the quiet town of Hampstead, Maryland. Victor was often seen riding his bike or running with his dog around the neighborhood. Since Victor was Christian and Sharon was expected to marry a Jewish man, this was seen as an act of rebellion. Some even claim that Sharon enjoyed how much her parents disliked Victor and the fact that he was Catholic. And a classmate described the marriage as a way of Sharon breaking away from her parents. Abraham and Beth did not attend the wedding and completely cut Sharon out of their lives, which this is going to have a profound effect on Sharon. Sharon's friend Lee Resnick said, "An Orthodox cantor is not going to announce to the world that his daughter married a non-Jew." Her parents disowned her and refused to publicly acknowledge that Sharon once belonged to their family, which is pretty brutal, man.
Yeah.
And despite what her parents thought, Sharon and Victor were happily married. Neighbors described them as a friendly couple. Sharon was often spotted in her electric blue Honda Civic wearing a t-shirt and jeans with 90s rock music blaring from the windows and just living that typical suburban life.
Yeah. Nothing really out of the ordinary. And in 1995, Sharon began an online advertising business from home while Victor went out to work at his construction job. And at the time, the internet was barely standard inside any given U.S. household. So Sharon got into online advertising before most people did. And she and a friend, Diane Safar, first sold $7 physical prints of Dion's Secret of Home Decorating Guide. One online ad read, "Home decorating secrets seen in the posh homes from the New England states to the Hollywood homes can now be yours. Never published before. Quick, easy ways to decorate your home." So since the internet was still fairly new at this time, Sharon also tried to sell the guides face-to-face as well, kind of door-to-door style with people that she knew. The business ended up being fairly successful. so she began selling even more things online. She called her business Classified Concepts Unlimited, and she charged $40 to $50 per ad copy. She also set up websites to sell psychic readings to vulnerable teenagers. She used discussion boards to kind of rope them in to her business. Sharon was one of the first to learn how to use the internet to grift and make some easy money, and she had purchased a $39 internet business kit from an Arizona-based company that enabled her to lease 1-900 numbers. This meant that she could charge the callers a premium rate per minute. She used the name Villado Dion with the title America's Most Powerful Mystic. According to her posts, Villado was from a small town in Manila where magic and the mystical sciences are commonly used in everyday life. So already early on, we're seeing she can kind of take on this different online persona to sell things. This is kind of the genesis of where she's about to go. By 1996, she posted to the teen message boards and she promised to be able to perform spells to help someone make money and also perform love spells, or as she put it, to capture the heart of the one you desire. Many were pretty skeptical, but she was able to fool a few, especially teenagers, and she also made money from selling advertising spaces on these message boards. She kept most of this a secret from her husband. She was mostly in control of the family finances, and she only told her husband that she made money from her online readings and home decor advertising. She specifically did not tell Victor about the phone sex hotline she had recently set up. So now we're seeing her kind of descend into something a bit different here, and also at the same time, she's being secretive about it. So while working the 1-900 calls, she realized that many of her clients felt very alone. Some did not engage in physical intimacy. Even those who had partners expressed that they had no one to share their deepest sexual fantasies with. These fantasies were often dark and depraved, as you can imagine. So they had to reach out to Sharon's sex hotline to express and fulfill these dark fantasies. And Sharon exploited these desires for profit. She also spent a lot of time visiting niche adult websites and adult chat rooms that reached into the more taboo subjects of sexual desire. It's unclear how much Sharon was actually personally interested in these sexual fantasies herself and how much she was really only searching for desperate clients that she knew she could kind of just make money off of. At times, she offered to sell her worn underwear, and she would charge a different rate depending on how long the underwear was worn. I mean, at this day, it's like we're kind of used to this now. It's like, do you hear people selling bath water? You know, that kind of became a meme.
OnlyFans before OnlyFans.
Yeah, it basically is. And so
through these like different phone, did you ever call like one of those sex phone numbers?
Absolutely not. No,
I did a few times.
Did you?
Yeah. When I was a teenager on the home phone too.
Oh man. So they had the receipts there probably.
Well, I never went
bill.
All the way through to get charged, but like so they'd have like a menu and then someone would eventually answer and then they'd start asking for like credit card information, but usually there'd be like this pre-recorded menu you'd get to and they'd be like you know, there'd be like all sorts of noise, sexual noises going on and you know, a little young horny teenager, you're just like listening to it. You're like, oh, what is this? What's going on now?
Hey, so you did it more.
Welcome to Sexual Fantasies. If you want to speak to a hot single right now, press 1. It'd be like that's that great. Sort of thing. That's what this reminds me of. She's kind of set up this like hotline for people to call in. And I just imagine her being like, hey, how are you? Tell me your deepest, darkest fantasy. And I'll give you my worn underwear.
Oh my God.
And like for $29.99.
I think the thing is here, I don't really understand 1-900 numbers, but isn't it that it will show up on the phone bill? It's like charged to the phone bill or something.
Well, yeah,
you used
to get charged different rates depending on the phone numbers, whether it was a local area code versus a 1-800, 1-900 number.
That's right.
Would be a different rate.
That's right.
Than just your local. So like your phone plan was likely only covered local numbers.
Right.
And so you'd get charged per minute basis for those other numbers. So like, that's why you had to get off pretty, like you could only be on these calls for so long before you started incurring costs for them.
Gotcha. Cause if I remember right, the 1-800 numbers, they would take the cost. The 1-900 was that the caller would,
would take the cost. And then you did the old reversal and you do the collect call. Boom.
Star 6-7 it.
Yeah. There we go. That shows how old we are. We remember this crap way back in the day.
We had landlines, man.
Yeah, we did. You had to memorize numbers in your head way back.
I still remember the Yellow Pages phone book showing up at the house. Yep,
the huge brick.
You could like roll through and like find your neighbor's numbers in there. It's wild.
Yep.
Now we're like, do not put my number anywhere.
Anywhere, yeah. Delist it everywhere. So, you know, with this in mind, we're kind of building the context of this time period. And this is, people weren't really doing this. Sharon was kind of a front
at the forefront of it. Yeah.
For all this. So,
and she quickly realized how to exploit it.
Yes. Yes.
She realized that this was an easy way to make cash and exploit people. And then she quickly realized, oh, I know how to attract the most vulnerable people to me.
Yeah. Very which lonely
makes
people.
It easier to exploit. And then also, you know, it seems like there's something else kind of clicking on at this point too. Like she's getting some other satisfaction from this,
sure,
whether it be control, power, or some type of sexual satisfaction out of it, I believe. But
sure.
It only gets worse though. These days, we're busy. Believe it or not, you might think that we just sit on our butts all day podcasting, doing the easiest job in the world. But are you wrong?
Yeah. Come feel how soft these hands are.
They haven't touched a tool in years. But we're busy. You know, it's a lot. It is a lot of work, actually, to do the show and prepare this content for you. And then when we leave, the work doesn't end. For me, I have to turn into dad and be a parent. And the last thing that I got time to do is go to the grocery store.
So just forego all that, especially this holiday season.
And get yourself Hungry Root. The thing about Hungry Root compared to other meal kits is it's super easy to put together. There's not a whole lot of cooking you actually have to do. It's more so heating things up, putting things together to make that final dish. What the great thing about Hungry Root is that they hold all of their food to high standards. So any foods you're getting from Hungry Root have been screened, which means that they've screened out over 200 additives, including high fructose corn syrup, artificial sweeteners, and preservatives. They source only high quality meat and seafood with no hormones or antibiotics. They offer organic produce and non-GMO options and carry trusted healthy brands like Oatly, Vital Farms, Ithaca Hummus, Harmless Harvest, and many more. So we love it, and we know you will too. You could take advantage of this exclusive offer for a limited time. You can get 40% off your first box, plus get a free item in every box for life.
Go to hungryroot.com/lightsout and use code lightsout. That's hungryroot.com/lightsout. Code lightsout to get 40% off your first box and a free item of your choice for life.
Well, you guys know Austin and I love ZocDoc. They've been a longtime sponsor of the show, and we genuinely love it and use it all the time.
Yeah.
Especially when you're looking for a new provider for maybe a specific type of ailment or, you know, some shit happens, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe you break your foot and you need to go see a podiatrist, or you need to go see an orthopedic surgeon.
Yeah.
You need wisdom teeth out. And that's the beauty of it. It is a simplified process. It's super easy. You can search all sorts of providers for literally anything and everything, including psychiatrists, therapists, you name it. They got you.
They got you.
They'll connect you with somebody who can help you and somebody that takes your insurance, and you can see real patient reviews. But the best thing about it is you can get appointments booked between 24 to 72 hours. And sometimes you can even score same day appointments, which is really nice when you're really feeling sick. It's amazing. It's amazing technology. It's a free app and website where you can search and compare high quality and network doctors and click to instantly book an appointment. So stop putting off those doctor's appointments and just go to ZocDoc.com/lightsout to find and instantly book a top rated doctor today.
That's ZocDoc.com/lightsout. ZocDoc.com/lightsout. Yeah. Some sites, I mean, she, we'll get into it a little bit later, but she would even describe herself as, I am 25, have blonde hair, green eyes, am 5'6", and weigh 121.
Is anyone out there interested in buying my worn panties or pantyhose? This is not a joke or a wacky internet scam. I am very serious about this. If you are serious too, you can email me. That's another thing about this case. This is, I think, one of the first, if not the first case that an email thread like cracked open.
Yeah, electronic evidence. Yeah, it was big.
Yeah. So some of the sites she visited included chat rooms that mentioned the most depraved sex acts, extreme BDSM and bondage, torture, and even necrophilia were discussed. Rather than being repulsed by this, she would lean into these users' desires, obviously, to make money off of them. She would role play according to clients' interests, and this resulted in several personas that she took on, different names and different profiles that she used across several websites.
So now she's catfishing too.
Yeah, yep.
She's full on catfishing. She's like an OG catfisher.
Right, yeah. She's really on the forefront of all this. So sometimes she would appear to be, like I said, 5'6", 121 pound, very innocent lady. That was one persona, and like kind of completely new to this adult chat room world and these various kinks that came with them. Other times she claimed to be a large 300 pound dominatrix who loved discipline, or sometimes she was a giantess who would crush men to death. So kind of fit whatever hole that she needed to, just to make some money. And regardless of what she claimed online, there's no evidence that really suggests any of these experiences occurred in Sharon's real life, the ones that she'll propose to other people, like she was saying, like crushing men to death.
It's kind of all talk versus she's actually doing these actions she's describing.
Yeah, so we're in a realm of complete fantasy here. And Sharon Lopatka, in real life, you know, she's 5'10", 189-pound woman. She lived in a very quiet ranch-style home in a cul-de-sac of Hampstead, Maryland. But, you know, quite a simple life. But on the internet, she realized, you know, as a lot of us do, you could just be anyone who you want to be, and she could make money off of it. That was the big thing.
She also marketed and allegedly sold pornographic content under the name Nancy Carlson, who sometimes posted as Nancy C. She proposed that she was a porn actress who operated her own porn studio and worked with actors in the industry. This was obviously a lie since Nancy didn't even exist, but she claimed she sold her videos with a starting price of $100. Believe it or not, that's expensive, man.
Whew,
yeah. It's up there. That's luxury porn there. Her video offers got even worse when she told clients she would allow them to access videos that included sexual abuse and violence. So now she's opening it up to a whole other demographic here.
Yeah.
And her business was also open 24/7. So some videos allegedly involved women being drugged, chloroformed, or hypnotized, and then sexually abused or assaulted. So now she's entered a whole other territory here. Like, here's one message. Hi, my name is Nancy. I just made a VHS video of actual women willing and unwilling to be knocked out, drugged, under hypnosis, and chloroformed. Never before has a film like this been made that shows the real beauty of the sleeping victim.
Ew.
It's getting pretty grimy here.
Yeah.
She claimed that she could get her hands on virtually anything, and nothing was forbidden. If she couldn't get her hands on it, then she claimed that she would make the videos herself. She wrote, "Let me customize your most exciting torture fantasy for you on VHS to watch and enjoy privately in the comfort of your own home. A film designed by you with scenarios of your choice. Films are shipped in plain envelopes to protect your privacy."
She also loves using ellipses for no reason. Yeah. Just a ton of those throughout all these posts.
There was one time she offered to show a video of women being chloroformed and restrained. Another video, which she claimed that she had made herself, showed her stomping on and killing men. Others involved women being frozen and turned into marble statues or robots. She also offered to make private bondage videos. And it's unclear which of these videos were even real, if any of them, but some of the videos had positive reviews on them, which may have been written by Sharon herself. She could have just been faking it. Other users warned that Nancy Carlson's content was a scam and that they paid for videos they never received. So you can kind of see what she's doing here. She's catering it to this demented audience who's willing to pay for it, but we're not even sure if there's anything there.
Therefore, it's most likely that Sharon did not create nor had access to any of the videos that she claimed to have had, and there's no evidence to suggest that any of these videos ever even existed. There's also no evidence to suggest she ever assaulted anyone, and all the while the people in Sharon's life, including her own husband, were unaware of her disturbing online activity. So now it's clear that she's living a double life online, hiding it from her husband, and she's getting into some pretty dark areas of the internet and talking to some probably pretty shady people.
Yeah. I mean, if you're willing to pay for videos that
like torture videos and stuff,
explicitly like criminal activity, you're probably a bad person, right?
Yeah. Sharon opened two mailboxes to receive money from her online sales, and from time to time she faced charges for passing bad checks, but she was never officially charged. Reportedly, she also had four social security numbers somehow. So now she's getting into fraud while we're at it.
Yeah.
According to the News and Observer, over the course of several months, Sharon posted more than 50 messages across various parts of the internet. And these niche corners included websites whose addresses included fetish feet, Amazon women admirers, sex bondage, and sex weight gain. One message was also posted to alt.sex.necrophilia, where Sharon had the username Gina108. And her message read, "Want to talk about torturing to death? Hi, my name is Gina. I was wondering if anyone out there would want to talk about the subject mentioned above with me. I kind of have a fascination with torturing till death. Of course, I can't speak about it with my friends or family. Would love to have an email exchange with someone. If you're interested, email me at gina108@aol.com. I hope you all don't think I'm strange or anything. I just want to talk about it." So now things are kind of taking a turn here. She's talking about wanting to be tortured to death and wanting to speak to somebody about it. And when people would reach out to her, Sharon would give her real name and her home telephone number. And many of her messages apparently included torture fantasies, like Sharon being force-fed until she was 475 pounds.
Apparently that is not a common fetish, but that it's out there. Yeah,
feeders. Yeah. Force-feeding a woman.
Yeah.
Or man. Force-feeding the partner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've watched some of those shows on TV, and some of the women that end up on it, it's always been women from the episodes that I've seen, which is why I said that, but yeah, they talk about how horrible that was. You know, like they were getting fed not only money, but they're also being sent food from these people that just want to see them eat massive amounts of food over and over and over again. And the people watching that content get sometimes a type of satisfaction sexually from it.
Yeah, it's like a weird control thing.
Very, very odd. She even expressed that she didn't want emails or phone calls, and she said she wanted the real thing and would even relocate if necessary to achieve her goal. But she specified that she didn't want any married people to respond, and she posted in several more message boards about being tortured to death as an erotic experience. And reportedly, several users reached out and corresponded with her, but they immediately stopped talking with her when they realized that she was serious about her death fantasy. It wasn't actually just to just talk about it and, you know, fantasize about it. It was about actually making this fantasy come true. Some thought it was a cry for help, and others thought, you know, she's just role-playing. This isn't real. She doesn't actually want to do this. But when Sharon began talking about how much it would cost to travel and what they would do when they met up, they quickly realized that, in fact, she was being serious about all this.
In September 1996, while she was browsing the internet, Sharon found a chat room with a person who had a fetish for torture. And according to his messages, he was a good lover who was born on Valentine's Day. Sharon was immediately fascinated by this stranger's obsession with sexual violence, and he told her he could fulfill any of her wishes. According to police, the user's name was Slowhand. His real name was Robert Frederick Glass, and he went by Bob or Bobby. He was a 45-year-old computer analyst from North Carolina who had a dead-end job working for his county government for 16 years. He made about $38,000 a year as he sat in a basement all day helping to program the tax rolls and the voter tabulation system. He also tracked the gas consumption of county vehicles, and his coworkers claimed he was quiet and they just didn't know him very well. Robert was fairly well known in his community. He was friendly, although a bit quiet, and he was a member of the Rotary Club, His sister was a church organist, and his late father, Joe Glass, was a beloved figure in the community who helped start the Ruritan Club, a local fire station and ambulance service. In his free time, Robert loved browsing the internet. He was a subscriber to America Online, which was basically a portal to the World Wide Web. Did you have America Online?
Oh, yeah, dude.
The same. They would, God, came on the disc, too. The discs were everywhere, too.
Yeah. I swear you would find an America Online disc in your cereal box.
Right, yeah, they were like that.
They were
that.
Just everywhere at the grocery store. They'd just be like free things.
Yeah, all over the place. It was really just like, what? It was like
it'd be
the
like
UI
accessing,
was different. And,
yeah, it was just like the presentation that which you logged in with.
Yeah, and I know my parents liked it because they could get the child.
KOL.
Yeah, KOL.
I had KOL. Kids Online.
Kids Online, yep. Exactly.
Lock that shit down.
Yeah,
Can't do shit on there.
Which, I mean, is good because we're seeing how much of a freak show it can be online at this time, especially.
The chat rooms, the AIM.
Yeah, yeah. Out of control. AIM, man. Wow.
AIM Messenger.
That, yeah.
You've got mail.
Yeah, yeah. The sound effect of the door opening and closing.
Well, and like every, this was like, AOL was like what Gmail is today.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like everybody has a Gmail account.
Ubiquitous. Yeah.
Back then it was AOL. Everybody had an AOL account.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Because they used America Online to get on the internet.
My parents used the same AOL.
Do they really?
Thing for like, I don't know if they use it anymore, but I swear, man, it was like 25, 30 years they were using their AOL account.
It was AOL and then MSN.
MSN. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that one
too. My dad had an MSN account.
Yep.
Yeah.
We're aging ourselves this episode, Josh, but
well,
good times back then, man. We weren't all
it's just a different period.
Yeah, it was a
kids
fun
these
time.
Days.
Kids these
don't
days.
Know how good they have it.
Ah, but yeah, America Online. So, you know, basically a portal to the World Wide Web, as we were saying. And on his profile, he claimed to love photography, music, and model railroads. And in the space on one of his profiles reserved for personal quotes, he added this: moderation in all things, including moderation. Bit foreboding here. He had been married for 14 years, but his wife Sherry had recently left him about 6 months earlier, and she took their three children with her. They had two girls ages 10 and 7 and a boy age 6. Sherry, who was described as a polite woman who went to church, claimed that over the years her husband had become obsessed with computers and would often isolate himself from his family. He would always claim he was doing quote-unquote work, and his obsession with his computer eventually ruined his relationships with his wife and his children. She claimed they separated because he had completely lost interest in her. She said, quote, computers became his life. He ate, slept, everything about computers. He would stay up almost all night on the internet. I'd have to drag him out of bed in the morning. She found some of his sexual messages that were in these chat rooms, but she figured that as long as the kids never saw, then it was okay. She said this: the final straw came when the kids asked me why Daddy didn't love me anymore. Realizing that Robert was too far gone, she then left. She took the children with her. 6 months later, Robert became the one man who wasn't scared off when Sharon Lopatka expressed her erotic fantasies involving her own death on internet message boards. And when Sharon and Robert found each other online, they immediately messaged back and forth. Police claimed they had nearly 900 pages of messages between them back and forth. And Captain Danny Barlow of the Caldwell County Sheriff's Department said, if you put all their messages together, you'd have a very large novel. It would be very thick, and I think you could say it would have a very sad ending.
That's a lot of instant messaging going on.
That's a lot. Sharon and Robert had many raw sexual and violent conversations email, and Robert was fully aware that Sharon was a married woman. They often talked about the violence that Robert would inflict upon Sharon. And after about 6 weeks of messaging back and forth every single day, they wanted this sexually violent fantasy to become realized.
Which leads us to October 13th, 1996. On this day, 35-year-old Sharon left her home. She told her husband, Victor, that she was going to visit a friend in Georgia for about a week. She left in her blue Honda Civic and drove about 45 minutes to Baltimore's Pennsylvania Station. Instead of going to Georgia like she had told her husband,
She got on the 9:15 a.m. train to Charlotte and arrived at 8:45 p.m. and she left her car in the station parking lot. Robert was there to pick her up at 9 o'clock in his pickup truck, and he drove to the dark back roads of Caldwell County, about 80 miles away from the station. This is where Robert lived alone in a shabby trailer just outside of Lenore. Back in Hampstead, Victor grew concerned when he hadn't heard from Sharon after a couple of days. And then almost a week had gone by, and he reached out to friends and family asking if they knew where she was. And when he talked to some of her friends, they warned him that Sharon didn't have any close friends in Georgia that they knew of. Victor then searched around their home for clues, and he came across a note from Sharon. And in the note, Sharon said that she wouldn't be coming home. She wrote, "If my body is never retrieved, don't worry. Know that I am at peace." That is a distressing message to find at your house.
Right.
Especially after your wife just left saying that she's just going to go visit friends. All of a sudden, everything has gone up 10 notches and you're now worried that something bad is going to happen.
Yeah.
If you're looking for the perfect holiday gift for a loved one, a friend, or even if you want to just treat yourself, then you need to check out Aura Frames. Aura Frames are changing the game with how you share pictures with your friends and family and display them at your house or your office or really wherever you want to plug it in. Aura Frames are an amazing way to do it. And the app is just incredible. I love how easy and seamless it is. You can invite other people to it so that they can add photos to your frame. You can also have them share photos directly to it if you want.
Yeah.
Then you can download those photos that they've shared with you from the Aura app itself onto your phone if you want. It's just the best way to collaborate with photos and display them on this beautiful frame screen. It looks like a picture frame, but it's a screen. It's got nice touch controls on it. Yeah. You can swipe between different ones. Play videos?
You can, yeah.
It's awesome. Yeah. We love it. It's a great gift. You definitely should check it out. And right now, we have a special offer. For a limited time, you can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $35 off Aura's best-selling Carver Mat Frames. It's named number one by Wirecutter by using promo code LIGHTSOUT at checkout.
That's AuraFrames.com, promo code LIGHTSOUT. And this deal is exclusive to listeners, and frames sell out fast. So order yours now to get it in time for the holidays. Support the show by mentioning us at the checkout. Terms and conditions apply.
If you're somebody who has been interested in online therapy, but you didn't know where to start, you weren't sure how much it was going to cost, or if your insurance was covered, you need to check out Rula. Rula has really changed the game with making it extremely easy to get set up online with therapists to get the counseling therapy that you've been wanting at a great price as well. And you can easily check to see which providers accept your insurance. With Rula, you can find the right therapist for you. Rula partners with a network of over 15,000 therapists and psychiatrists nationwide, enabling you to find your personalized solution and the right therapist for you, which is really important, based on your needs, preferences, and state requirements. And in-network, covered care for most major insurance plans, you'll pay as little as $15 per session, but depending on your benefits, your copay could be as little as $0 per session. So it really just depends on what your insurance is, and Rula can definitely help find the right care for you that's affordable. And they really are dedicated to true end-to-end care. They're committed to supporting you and staying with you every step of the way on your mental health journey. From finding the right therapist to helping you schedule appointments and monitoring your progress, they're really there to help. We love it. We highly recommend it. I recommend it to anybody out there who maybe you've tried other online providers and didn't have a lot of good luck, or maybe you did the in-person thing for a while and it's just, it was too much time, too expensive. Definitely take this opportunity to go check out Rula. Thousands have already trusted Rula to support them on their journey toward improved mental health and overall well-being, so head on over to rula.com/lightsout to get started today.
After you sign up, they ask you where you heard about them, and please support our show and tell them our show sent you. Go to rula.com/lightsout and take the first step towards better mental health today. You deserve quality care from someone who cares.
Fearing what this note meant, Victor immediately called the police. When they interviewed Victor, he told them that his wife Sharon made a living by selling things online. And so they're like, okay, we should probably take a look at the computer then, where she spent a lot of time. So when the computer crimes unit checked the home computer, that's when they found a slew of emails and chat logs between Sharon and Robert. After going through her internet history, police uncovered the disturbing sexual abuse video scams and depraved role-playing that Sharon had been participating in. Investigators said the messages between Robert and Sharon described in detail how Slohan was going to sexually torture the missing person and ultimately kill her. The emails also specifically mentioned committing these acts at Robert's house. The police could hardly believe that Sharon, seemingly normal woman from the outside, would willingly abandon her husband to seek out being killed by a stranger online. I mean, that is an extremely hard thing to wrap your head around then and even now.
Yeah. Even here on Lights Out.
Yeah. Even
we've covered
we've
everything.
We've seen the whole gambit. Yeah. This is a whole different level here. They also found it odd that she had left a clear trail of breadcrumbs behind. Not only her online activity, but her train tickets to Charlotte and her car in the parking lot of the station. Maryland police then contacted Charlotte, North Carolina police and filled them in on the situation. On October 22nd, police began monitoring Robert Glass at his trailer, hoping to find Sharon alive. They monitored him for 3 days. According to Captain Danny Barlow, they watched him leave his trailer to go to work and return, in which he drove 42 miles both ways, and there was never any signs of Sharon. On October 25th, police got a search warrant for his trailer. Rusted toys and garbage littered the lawn. So you can just kind of picture what his place looks like. It's exactly what you picture in your head. They entered his home, which was also a complete mess, while Robert was away at work. Four puppies were chewing on anything in sight. Police found items that belonged to Sharon, but there were no signs of her. Inside his home, they found thousands of storage discs, drug paraphernalia, bondage pornography, a pistol, bondage equipment, sex toys, and child sex abuse material. They also found Robert's beloved top-of-the-line computer. His estranged wife said he had an IBM compatible with 66 megahertz, 8 megabytes of RAM, a gigabyte hard drive, things that some people would drool over. Those specs at the time, yeah, not bad.
Yeah, but now super, super dated.
Now, even the worst iPhone is supreme over this computer
right.
in every way.
And the storage disks, I wasn't sure if these were like compact disks or if they were actual floppy disks.
My guess is probably floppy disks. You know, yeah.
Yeah, back in the day. Oh, yeah. Floppy disk.
Yeah, like almost like a little tape.
Yeah, it's funny that we still, the save icon is still a floppy disk to this day, which kids these days probably don't even know that.
Yeah. But, kids barely know about CDs.
True, yeah.
Disc players.
It was also filthy in there, I know, and again, this is after this guy's wife and children abandoned him, so this guy's clearly going way far off the deep end. And as they're searching the trailer, outside the trailer, an officer was actually out getting some air when he noticed a fresh patch of newly turned dirt. This was about 75 feet from the trailer at the edge of the woods. And this is near where Robert burned his garbage, because he was also burning his garbage here, which is gross. But Captain Danny Barlow and another officer began digging in this location, and about 2.5 feet down, they hit what looked like a human knee. They uncovered the rest of the body, confirming that it was Sharon Lopatka. County investigator D.A. Brown said that if she had been buried out in the woods, she may have never been found. Her wrists and ankles had been bound by rope, similar to how women had been tied up in Robert's bondage pornography collection that he had inside. Scrapes also covered her body, and the rope was still tied around her neck. The autopsy confirmed that she had died from strangulation, most likely by the rope that was still around her neck when they found her. There were also signs of torture, including sharp objects being inserted inside her body while she was still alive. Some of the wounds showed signs of healing, leading the coroner to conclude she had been tortured for days before her death by strangulation on October 16th. Robert Glass was arrested while at work that same day, and he was fired the following day. He appeared very calm when police put the handcuffs on him, and back at the station, he calmly confessed to killing Sharon with a rope during sex, but claimed that everything between them was consensual, including the murder. He also admitted to putting a gun inside of Sharon at her request. His lawyer, Neil Beach, later said that Robert claimed the murder was only an accident, that he only meant to cut off her airways for a moment. He told investigators, "I don't know how much I pulled the rope. I never wanted to kill her, but she ended up dead." A judge then placed a gag order on everyone involved, including the lawyers.
For the DA, this seems like a cut and dry murder. They also had emails from Robert claiming that he wanted to kill her, which made it premeditated. So he was initially charged with first degree murder. And since there were arguments over the consent to murder, some wondered if it could be classified as suicide. And since Robert claimed it was an accident, some argued it should be considered manslaughter.
I mean, to me, it's like if you consent or you don't consent to murder, it's still illegal. It doesn't,
right?
In the eyes of the law, that doesn't really matter in this case. I don't know. A lot of people want to make a stink over like if she did or didn't consent to it. Also, we don't know in those final moments. We have no idea if she changed her mind.
Yeah, exactly.
Or what if she no longer
is there a recording of it? Is there, you know what
right,
I mean?
Yeah.
Do we have any evidence that this is the case?
Right.
And like you said, it's illegal in the eyes of the law.
Yeah. It's if you consent to smoking drugs, the doesn't drug mean, might still be illegal.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Just
exactly.
Because you consent to it.
And as you can imagine, this type of case really caught the attention of the entire nation, and some sleuths were able to find Sharon's post history using Usenet, one of the internet's most popular features, even before there was a World Wide Web, and this included 20,000 forums with millions of users on every imaginable topic.
This is
kind of like Reddit before Reddit.
Yeah, almost. Yeah, it is. And this kind of blew my mind because a lot of this case wouldn't be known without this, without these journalists going in here and discovering a lot of this content. We would just kind of think it was just like a more or so just a cut and dry murder.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this really blew open the case. And it also begs to ask the question, like, how much has the internet changed true crime even?
Yeah.
Like how much
yeah.
we actually know about all this and the ins and outs, all the details of people's private lives is kind of interesting.
Well, it's the digital footprint.
Yeah, right.
It's going in, and now we all leave a digital footprint, and some more than others. And that is an investigational tool at this point. You know, mm-hmm. it's like that is where they go to find out information on you, your activity. And depending on who you are, you know, that activity can lead investigators one way or another.
Yeah.
And because this reporter went and found dozens of messages from Sharon relating to her sexual posts, they uncovered some pretty damning messages here. They had messages that showed Sharon pleading for someone to kill her to fulfill her ultimate sexual fantasy. So they found the proof. They found definitive proof from Sharon. And up until this point, most of the internet usage history was known only to police. So now these reporters are digging in, finding further evidence that the police didn't necessarily have. And the information changed the face of the case in the eyes of the public. At first, the case was only seen as a tragedy involving a deranged killer and an unsuspecting woman. But through this revelation of Sharon's online activity, the conversation among journalists and public quickly changed. To many friends of Sharon, the internet user portrayed was not the woman they knew in real life, which is probably pretty shocking for them.
Yeah.
Sharon's neighbor, Deborah Walker, said, "I guess some people have some kind of inner thing going on that you just never know about. I think we knew them as well as anyone in the neighborhood. She was just like anyone else. And that kind of scares me in a way, to think you really never know somebody." Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. Her friend Diane Safar said, "What I want people to know is the woman I knew was not crazy in the slightest. She was always a happy person, always bubbly even. This person who was killed was not the person I knew." One of Sharon's best friends from her teen years, Lee Resnick, said she had no strange desires. There's no reason to think that she was anything other than a normal suburban girl. Marlene Harmon, a cashier at a grocery store, she said, "She seemed pleasant whenever you talked to her. That's why all of this is so unbelievable. Bizarre is the word." Sharon's parents refused to comment on the case. So how much do those statements really like mean in the grand scheme of like the case itself? You know what I mean? They grew up with her. They were like,
She never vocalized any of this to us, any of these bizarre things she was into. But that's just kind of like a given, right? Not everybody tells everybody their, especially
extremely kind of, private sexual things.
Exactly.
As well.
Yeah. It's like, it's not that surprising that the content she was into would not be something that she'd disclose. But on the other hand, I guess the other point you could make was, well, she wasn't ever into this. And this person that she's now become based on these messages, something must have happened to her, or maybe this, it's their way of just dealing with it. And also kind of fighting back on the front of, she kind of brought this on herself, right? Like she, this was never her. We don't know what happened. Maybe she was brainwashed. She started talking to this guy. But yeah, very confusing for them, I'm sure.
Yeah. And I mean, like we've been saying, I don't, pre-internet, would any of this really have come to light, or to this extent really have, would it have come to light? Cause yeah, I don't know if you were doing kind of freak stuff before, back in the day, before you had a digital footprint, you probably might've been remembered as a community leader who was, you know, whatever, never did anything weird in his life, and you'd die and 100 years later, you'd still be respected. George Washington, he never did anything weird. We don't know that. What if we could go back and see like whatever George Washington's internet history? I don't know why I'm pulling George Washington out of this, but my point being is
probably wouldn't be good.
Yeah, that I think. Yeah, it's, I don't know.
Probably wouldn't be good. Let's be honest.
He's a president.
I know what circles he'd be in.
He'd be on the Epstein plane for sure. But I think my point is that, I think just to this degree of having someone's internet history, when it's dealing with something like this, exposed to this degree, is this was like kind of the first of its kind.
Yeah.
You know?
And especially then when they don't fully understand the technology or understand the ramifications of whatever you put online is online forever.
Yeah.
It can be retrieved always. Nothing is deleted. Nothing
exactly.
Once it's there, it's very hard to get it off.
Yeah.
And I think it was early on, they didn't really fully understand that. And I think even today, there's a lot of people that don't understand that what you put online is going to be there forever.
Yeah.
Whether you delete it or not, it's still sitting on a server somewhere where it could be accessed by somebody who knows how to do it. And it's, it's interesting, this sort of false sense of security the internet gives you and all these services give you, of like, even these anonymous forums and places like Reddit and things like that. And people think that they can hide behind anonymous usernames and post whatever they want and download all of their thoughts, good or bad, to it. And, you know, I'm good, I'm safe, but that's not the case. Everything can be accessed.
Yeah. Privacy is an illusion.
Yeah. With the right authority, you can access any of these records and data and, you know, your IP address can be exposed and boom, now we can figure out who you are. So it's interesting that a lot of people don't understand that, and they just operate as if it is this truly safe place where I can disclose. And again, it's a great place for people to operate within the confines of the law and the confines of morality and things like that, and are using it for good, and, you know, a way to connect with one another and find similar minded people and things like that. And that's the beauty of it. But it's kind of, the internet, it will forever be this double-edged sword.
Yeah. And I think now we, you know, we very much so understand privacy doesn't really exist. All our data is sold out there.
No.
But I think maybe in 1995 or something, it was a different story, like 80s and 90s, it might have been a different story, where you think you can kind of go into these closed rooms and, it's completely anonymous. I think the illusion was still alive and well in the 90s.
Which is surprising, because the Computer Crimes Unit came right in and found it all right away.
Everything's right here.
It's like they clearly had enough knowledge that they knew how to find the internet history.
And I think that Computer Crimes Unit at the time was like really new.
Yeah,
it was
right. Like they probably had just been trained on how to search the logs for America Online.
Right.
You know what I mean? And they finally knew how to do that, because they, you know, there's like, I mean, I used to do it. I used to clear my internet history. You know, you get on the computer, you go to some sites you don't want your parents to know about, and then hit that clear online history, erase cookies and history. Well, that deletes it for like, you know, your average internet user, but it's very easy to go and get the logs for that. And then you can parse that data and find exactly, and then even drill down even further if you want.
Yeah.
Nothing is truly scrubbed.
Never.
Unless you physically destroy hard drives.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, and if it's saved to a hard drive, but otherwise, forget about it. Yeah, it's there. It's yep. it's able to be retrieved. But
for yeah. good reason.
Yeah,
too.
I mean, as it should be.
I'm glad that the FBI scary place. can find, you know, the cretins that are existing out there on the internet.
Well, that's how we catch the bad guys now.
Yeah, for real.
Is online. That's how we find them. And that's how we catch sexual predators.
Yep.
And,
yeah.
And, you know, people that exploit children and all that is, and scammers.
Yeah.
Seriously. You know, all the scammers now that are trying to infiltrate us every single day, you know, it's like it's all electronic. And still, people, I feel like, don't realize that and still operate as if, like, it's a safe place. I can just put whatever out there. It's telling me I'm safe. I've got my antivirus up today. I'm good. But again, different time period. And I mean, these are early days. I don't think my parents were thinking about that at all.
No, I don't think really anybody
so
was.
New, and you're just kind of like, oh, this is cool technology.
Yeah.
Well, wasn't it treated as a fad when the internet first became kind of big?
People. Oh, there's people that were like against it too.
Yeah. Yeah. Even when Sharon was starting her like online advertising thing, people were like, what? This is kind of lame. Is this really viable? And little did we know. I mean, that was the future, really. Yeah.
I know all of her friends from her childhood, you know, and from the past, said that she never gave any signs of this being, of her being this type of person that was into these kind of things. I don't think she probably was when she was younger, probably because she didn't have any access to them. She couldn't fathom these kind of things. It's an exploration thing. And I think diving into like the online, like, for lack of a better term, becoming a phone sex operator and diving into all these fantasies with these different strangers, it kind of allowed her to experiment herself. And I think that's what kind of brought her down this path, just going deeper and deeper and deeper.
Yeah, and even people who knew her, not even in school, but into adulthood, I think the scary part is that people can live double lives, you know, that you just won't really know. And I mean, we covered Jared Fogle, you know, remember that case? And it's like, I mean, how could you forget that case? But that dude was fooling the entire nation.
Yeah.
Right? Like, mm-hmm. We were all fooled into thinking
we're all rooting for him and his weight loss. Right, yeah. Meanwhile, he's doing horrific things
to kids. Terrible, terrible, terrible creep. Yeah. So I think people can live double lives. And I think the internet has given kind of a shield, like a wall that separates the two lives as well, where it's easier to hide behind your computer.
And there's a level of anonymity that comes with being online.
Right. At least to the people that you know.
Yes.
Like the people in your daily life that you can hide from them on the internet.
Yeah.
Once you cross the line into illegal territory, then you can't necessarily hide from the authorities, but you can hide from your family. You can hide from your friends.
That's why we have internet trolls.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you can catfish people. Yep. You can be whoever you want to be. Which again, there's pros and cons to all of that. Sometimes it's fun to escape and be a character in a video game for a day.
Sure.
And that's a positive thing for you. But then it's another thing when you're pretending to be the opposite sex, you know, and you're trying to scam somebody out of money, or, you know, you're trying to take advantage of somebody. And it's just, it's a wild place. Yeah. I mean, it's... You can be whatever you want to be, but you can also completely destroy yourself.
Yeah.
All in the same place, depending on where you go. And then don't even get me started on the dark web. You really want to go down the dark rabbit holes and probably end up in prison. The dark web is a whole other layer you can start messing around with. And that's where a lot of, like, especially from the early days, a lot of these, you know, really dark corners of the internet, this was kind of before the dark web really got started. That they were doing this just on the World Wide Web. You know, it wasn't on this different layer as it is now. And so it was easier to find those places and find those people, as opposed to today. Like, yes, you can still go find some of that, just on your normal web browser. But now to really find the really dark stuff, you know, people are doing snuff films and all that kind of stuff. You definitely have to go to a different layer, that being the dark web, to find it. Which people do, and people start poking around on there, and that's a slippery slope, whether you're just going there for curiosity. And so what's the saying, like, curiosity killed the cat?
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of true.
Yeah.
Right. And in this case, it, kind of feels like that's the way we're headed, is it's, she's found this curiosity. It's scratching this itch for her, but it's also just ripping her from reality.
Yeah.
Here's a woman who had a life, who had a husband, who had like everything going for her in many respects. And it was the time, all the hours spent on the internet talking to these people, and now to Mr. Robert over here, where things really start to go wrong. Cause then you get connected up with somebody and you both start feeding off that same energy and that same interest, and you kind of snowball effect.
Yeah, it's kind of an echo chamber too.
Yeah.
And our last sponsor for today is Tovala. Tovala makes it extremely easy, where you virtually do nothing to create a home-cooked meal that's delicious, that's restaurant quality. The actual recipes themselves are dishes that I've seen at fine dining restaurants. And the beauty of it is you have a Tovala smart oven that can do it all. It can steam, it can bake, it can broil, it can roast, it can cook all of your food all together in one unit. Tovala is a smart meal delivery service, fresh meals, and a smart oven that does the cooking for you. And what makes it truly simple is that when Tovala sends you their meals, they come with a recipe card with a barcode. And on the actual oven itself, it has a little barcode reader or QR code reader. And you just scan the recipe card. It loads up all of the cooking times and temps and types of cooking that needs to happen. And then it's like two or three steps. Sometimes the meals are already in the tins themselves, the baking tins, but you're just putting a few things into tins and you're putting it all in the oven at once. You scan the recipe card and hit start and walk away.
Hell yeah.
And your meal just magically gets made perfectly.
Every bachelor's dream.
Literally. Yeah, you get recipes like filet mignon and creamy peppercorn sauce with buttery roasted root vegetables, or you can get herb roasted chicken with creamy pumpkin risotto. I had a macadamia nut crusted salmon. Honestly, I was very impressed.
That sounds delicious.
Because it made the salmon, the risotto, and the broccoli.
All at once.
And for a limited time, because you are a Lights Out listener, you can save up to $300 on the Tovala Smart Oven when you order meals 6+ times by heading to Tovala.com/lightsout and using our code lightsout.
That's up to $300 off when you head to Tovala.com/lightsout and use promo code lightsout. One last time for the people in the back, that's Tovala.com. And make sure you use our promo code lightsout for up to $300 off the Tovala Smart Oven. Remember, with Tovala, dinner is taken care of.
Well, if we could remember back to Sharon's husband, Victor, he placed a no trespassing sign outside his house in Hampstead and did not want to talk about the case, which I respect that. I mean, I couldn't even imagine what kind of shitstorm this started for him. Victor's father, John Lopatka Jr., said that his family was shattered. He said, "Too much has come out already about this case. The respectful thing to do would be to leave us alone. This is a tragedy, nothing more and nothing less." Unfortunately, his statement didn't put a stop to the rampant media speculation, because talk about a juicy news story for the media. This has everything that they want to talk about.
Yeah, and I agree with him. This is a tragedy, which I think you can, maybe some people will assign certain labels or things to Sharon based on, you know, we did know that she was like, real or not, those videos, if, you know, she was proposing that she was essentially just selling criminal videos online, you know, you can kind of say like, oh, well, that's not great. That's morally wrong. But still at the end of the day here, I think this is a tragedy. Even if she was in a place where she was consenting to her own death, that is still a tragedy to me in every sense of the word. So, well, you know, many saw the victim and perpetrator as Sharon and Robert. Others saw them as their sexually deviant online personas, Slowhand and Nancy C was her handle, which, yeah, I think people want to kind of separate the two, when really, I mean, we have to remember the human sides of these people, especially Sharon as well. And the conversation at large turned into one about the perversity and the dangers of the internet, which we are still talking about this 30 years
later. It's going to be an ongoing conversation.
Forever. For the rest of time. Yeah. Countless messages were uncovered in these chat rooms that revealed people sought out suffering and pain for sexual gratification. And some directly blamed the murder on the internet, which is kind of silly to me. But
probably a lot of the prior gen.
Yeah, some of the older folks. Right,
man, we didn't have to worry about this back in our day.
Right, yeah.
They didn't have this stuff running the newspaper.
Exactly, yeah.
It's now kind this of, damn internet.
It's kind of a tone-deaf take here. It's obviously much more to that conversation. But politicians and parents became concerned about online activity in general, and some argued that Sharon's internet usage escalated her sexually deviant desires and that any child could end up like Sharon. That's what these people were saying. Counter-arguments claim that the internet naturally provides safety countermeasures, if you think of it, since almost everything is recorded and stored somewhere, as we were talking. Without these digital breadcrumbs, Sharon might have never been found in the first place.
Which is pretty true.
Yeah, the emails really is what led them there. And then, you know, on the other hand, the counter-argument to that is she might have never have met Robert Glass, the perpetrator, in the first
place.
Yeah, also
probably true.
Right. Many also argued that the internet and its anonymity created safe places for fringe but harmless communities that failed to find acceptance in their lives beyond the internet. I think this is really important to remember. Message boards, you know, far less nefarious than the ones we've been talking about, created places where communities like LGBTQ+, that community could safely express themselves, especially in times when society was far less welcoming. In response to the criticism of the internet during this case, Al Cooper, director of the San Jose Marital and Sexuality Center, said that we shouldn't demonize the internet. He said, it has done so much to help people with their sexuality, and he found the internet to be a good first step toward communicating about difficult subjects such as sexuality. I tend to agree with him. I think things can be, you know, multiple things at one time. It's kind of a double-edged sword. Mm-hmm. On one hand, yes, did this tragedy pretty much come about because of online activity? Yes. But then there are also really positive elements of that online activity that's like close, but, you know, adjacent, maybe not touching. Maybe the Venn diagram isn't overlapping, you know, with things like conversations of sexuality or people struggling with dealing with their own sexuality and understanding it. Versus then there's like this sexuality that is clearly, I'll just say it, a problem where you're dealing with violence in sexuality. And it's easy to just conflate the two and say, well, it's all bad. Let's write it all off, which I don't know. We understand that these conversations are more nuanced than that. And I think we can agree that people who just say, point their finger at the internet and say it's all bad because this negative thing came from it, is kind of a lazy take and not really understanding of certain communities here. But unfortunately, with the case of Sharon LaPaca, the widespread moral panic had already seeped into the mainstream conversation, as it always does. And even David Flaherty, the Caldwell County prosecutor, said, I don't know about this internet.
that right there. I don't know about this internet.
Right. I think I'm not letting my kids anywhere near it for quite a while.
Man.
I don't know about this internet. And
it's a scary thing.
Yeah, right. Which, I mean, you should be concerned about your children's online activity,
so
right?
Monitor your kids' internet activity.
Right, yeah.
Set ground rules and boundaries.
Yeah, you don't have to deprive them of it completely, but, you know, that's moral panics. That's how they work. The details of this murder also spread so far that even the man himself, conservative talk radio personality Rush Limbaugh, said this: if you want to be tortured and killed, you can go to the right place on the internet. Also,
can order it up.
Yeah. Also, just like a terribly insensitive thing to say about this case as well. Just,
yeah, this damn internet. You can just order up your own murder if you want.
Yeah. And that's exactly what talk radio.
Yeah. Well, his audience is like, yeah.
Yeah. Say some inflammatory shit. Yeah. Good work, guys. We really solved this whole thing. One person in particular, Tanith Tier, a self-described sex rights advocate, had actually come across Sharon's posts on extreme bondage and death online before she was murdered. So she was actually communicating with Sharon. And she said, I hope I can mitigate at least some small portion of the outcome by making it possible for more people to understand why and hopefully learn from the mistakes that were made here, including mine. Because she claimed she had tried to counsel Sharon over the internet, but according to her, Sharon responded with this: "I want to surrender completely. I want to die." Tanith said she tried to get Sharon to understand the difference between fantasy and reality, but Sharon responded by saying, "I want the real thing. I didn't ask for you preaching to me." But as this panic spread, some locals even blame Robert's estranged wife, Sherry Glass. This is how crazy this case just got derailed. They said that if she hadn't left him, he wouldn't have descended into his dark fantasies on the internet. Classic grade A misogyny here, just to blame the woman for no reason.
Oh, they had to do it.
Right. Sherry responded saying, "They don't really know everything." Also, poor Sherry. She even has to defend herself in this scenario. She said, "I left. This is hard to say, but I left because he said he was no longer attracted to me. I still loved him, but when I went to hug him, he would push me away. When I said I loved him, he said it back in a way that he really didn't mean it. The final straw was when the kids asked me why Daddy didn't love me anymore." When it came to the messages she had found on his computer, it was unclear exactly what Sherry had discovered, and she never really would say. But she did say this: "One night, I cooked him all his favorites. He was in a mood to talk for a change, so I asked him about it. I quoted something he had said on the chat session. All the color drained out of his face. He knew then that I knew. I guess he underestimated my ability on the computer. I have been confused by this. He's such a nice, gentle person. If he did do it, I really can't see him doing something like that, killing someone, or meaning to, even after all I read. But there's this other side to him, a side of him I didn't know."
Man, that's like, when she puts it like that, what a defining moment in their relationship and realizing that this guy is not the guy.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought I knew. I know. Imagine having that three children with him too, and then realizing
you discover this secret about him, and you're like, "Oh my God, who am I married to?"
Nightmare situation.
Well, Robert Glass had used Wave Communications, a year-old business that connected users to the internet, and in defense of his business, Paul Greer admitted his customers used sex chat rooms, but said, "You would consider me uninformed to say that's not going on. But so are mom and dad communicating with their kids in college and furniture makers here transferring their data in a spreadsheet to Saudi Arabia and older folks on the geriatric network. It's a superhighway. It's a new day." Which, what a wild statement.
It sounds like a sales pitch. It does. Weird.
Ron P. Hawley, who headed up the North Carolina State Bureau of Investigation Division probing computer crimes, argued it was a new way for criminals to meet who used to be limited by location and transportation. Which, yep.
I agree.
That's a proven fact.
Mm-hmm.
But the overall debate still rages on to this day. As Robert Glass sat in jail waiting his trial, his sister Joan Glass said, "I don't consider my brother an animal, and I don't consider him violent. There's no understanding to be had here. There's no understanding of the taking of any human life. That's God's place. If my brother did anything, that's between him and God." In the eyes of the law, Robert's fate was between him and the court. The defense pointed out that through emails, it was clear that Sharon had explicitly asked Robert to torture her to death. They also stood by their initial defense that the killing was accidental. It took 3 years for the case just to go to trial. The DA was not convinced they had evidence or enough evidence to convict Robert Glass of first-degree murder, so they ended up offering him a plea deal, and on January 27, 2000, he pled guilty to voluntary manslaughter and 6 counts of second-degree sexual exploitation of a minor for the child sexual abuse material they found. He was sentenced to 36 to 53 months in the Avery Mitchell Correctional Institution, and then in federal court, he was given an additional 27 months for federal charges of second-degree minor exploitation to be served consecutively. So in total, his sentence was about 6.5 years.
Isn't that crazy? Despite what all the arguments you can make in this case, that is mind-blowing to me.
6.5 years for all of this shit.
Yeah.
It seems like
maybe the DA just didn't really understand what they were dealing with the evidence wise. And maybe it was, they hadn't tried something like this before, clearly. And yeah. So they were very nervous about what the jury would actually think or what was true, what was not. I don't know. It's kind of interesting that they just, and maybe it was also because they really thought at first this was premeditated. And the more they looked into it, they're like, the last thing we want is for him to get acquitted, right? Yeah. If they try him for first degree murder, and ultimately the jury's like, well, so I think it was a combination of things here that they ultimately went for the, but to drop it down to voluntary manslaughter,
right?
Is pretty wild. What? Yeah. I don't know about that. I think there's maybe a little bit more there, but again, it's really tough because the all of the messages from Sharon, I think, make it really hard to potentially convince a jury that this was murder. But I don't know. What do you think out there? Because I don't know how I feel about that. 6.5 years, I think, for a sentence, though, is a little light.
Yeah, also only 27 months for the second degree murder. Yeah. For the child sex exploitation materials. Yeah. Come on.
That's like a slap on the wrist for that. Well, ultimately, 2 years after his sentencing, Robert didn't make it very long. He was found dead of a heart attack in prison on February 20th, 2002, at the age of 51. This was 1 month before his state sentence was up, before his then federal sentence would kick in. But this case really still continues to gain attention because of its bizarre circumstances and the idea that someone could potentially consent to their own murder. It was also the first case where a suspect was discovered through emails. But really, this just left a lot of questions in people's minds of, like, there's a lot of dangers. There's a lot of things that you can get into that could potentially end up deadly. And, you know, this idea of you don't ever really know who you're meeting online.
Yeah,
and so even true. Even now, it's like a lot of people hide on the internet.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the idea of Facebook. You can't hide.
Yeah.
No hiding on Facebook. You got your face, you know, you got to verify your identity and stuff. And obviously there's ways to make fake Facebook profiles now. But the initial idea behind it, I think, was really to like eliminate that anonymity and really kind of make this place where, no, you are talking to people that you know and can see their faces and their pictures. Hey, it's Facebook. Mm-hmm. But now that's kind of slipped away and people are on other things, and it's very easy to create fake profiles on any of the sites these days.
So right.
You just gotta be careful.
Yeah. It does also open up the conversation with like physician assisted suicide. Mm-hmm. Like, we know that that is a way to consent to your own death too.
Which obviously. You can do here in Colorado.
Oh, is it really? It's legal here. I mean, coming from Michigan, you know, that was Jack Kevorkian. That was
right.
He was doing all that stuff in Dr. Detroit, where I grew up. And my mom was a at the time a nurse at Beaumont when they were dropping off the bodies there, just at the front door, because they was still illegal. So they would just take the drop the body, put the driver's license on, and peel out of the parking lot. But I mean, that's a conversation to be had too, where it's like, we know people can consent to their own death, but then it's like, well, where do we draw the line? And what does it mean?
And what's exactly the context of it too?
Yeah, exactly. That matters a lot.
Cause like there's certain criteria that has to be met for you to be approved for a physician assisted.
Absolutely.
Cause a lot of times
usually it's a terminal illness.
Yeah.
Lou Gehrig's disease or
somebody like who's versus, you know, going and taking your life another way that potentially causes more harm to your family and loved ones, and yourself, you know, a less quick way, you know? So yeah, it definitely is, like, a parent makes me concerned about my child's internet usage. And even on fucking YouTube Kids, dude, I gotta be careful.
Really?
Yeah. There's some weird shit that's made it onto YouTube Kids.
Really?
Like, we'll like, she'll get like a little bit of iPad time in the car, and we completely remove just like the YouTube app. So we got YouTube Kids. But even on YouTube Kids, she'll stumble upon some like supposed kids content. And we're like, we can listen to it. And we're like, what the hell? What'd they just say? Like, there's no way that was in a kids thing.
and just the way that some of the toys are played with, and it's just some weird shit on there.
Huh.
You got to be careful on everything, even the stuff that's labeled as kids.
God, man.
Shit slips through the cracks, or people are always figuring out how to exploit. I mean, the whole fucking Roblox situation going on.
What's going on
with
there? I'm a little out of touch with the Roblox.
Dude, there's like a fucking neo-Nazi cult.
Oh, I did like hear infiltrated, about this. Yeah, yeah.
Infiltrated Roblox. And
also
it's crazy.
Also not to mention the amount of predators on
yes,
Roblox.
And, yeah. And sexually exploiting children through Roblox. And I was just watching.
We could do a whole episode
no,
on just things
I know.
From Roblox,
yeah.
To be honest.
I was just watching I was watching an interview of somebody talking about how on Roblox, like you can pay for like packs that you can download content to your Roblox world.
Their experiences.
Experiences. And they have the Charlie Kirk experience on there. Kids can download a Roblox Charlie Kirk experience that they can then watch, and it has the whole, all the graphic details to it in the kids' game.
That's crazy.
That
man.
They can use the virtual currency for from the game to purchase and download. Mm-hmm. Roblox is a complete mess, and you really wonder how this has been able to go on for so long. And whoever owns that fucking video game, I don't know how they still are not in prison. Like, it's crazy.
Let's just bring Mr. Rogers back. Dude, let's go back to those
sometimes
days.
I just am like, I fucked up by even letting my child see the TV. I should have been like my parents and threw all the electronics out the window and kept like one tiny little TV that
it's a VHS player
that has like the bunny ears and antennas
just,
on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. You just get like PBS and, and two
the
other
news,
channels.
Like,
yeah,
that's it's like, that's it.
Yeah.
And it's just static on every
that
other
was
channel.
Like that was literally we had a TV in our kitchen, tiny TV, but that's all it got. It was just antennas, and we got
to like wiggle it around to get the reception.
Yeah,
because man, it is a scary place there, and just the criminals. As technology gets more and more advanced, so are the criminals.
Always, yeah.
And it seems like oftentimes the criminals are ahead of the authorities in many ways, and the authorities are just strict, just completely overwhelmed.
Yeah, and even
and
just
don't have the resources and manpower and technology to combat this stuff. It's
and when all your government leadership is run by 85-year-olds who don't understand what the internet is, how do we convince them to pass legislature to protect people on the internet, right?
Yeah, I don't know. The future is going to be a weird place, man, especially with the
understatement of the year. Yeah.
Future's weird. We thought this was weird.
Yeah, right. No, but seriously, yeah, I don't know.
I think this type of thing is going to continue to happen and continue to, but this idea of cases where people are consenting to something happening to them, you know, like we just covered a case on Mile Higher of, it was sort of, this was a Tinder date. Where the guy ultimately, she was dead. He stayed over in a room overnight. They had a sexual encounter and she was dead the next morning.
Oh God.
And he said that she wanted to be choked during it. And ultimately he choked her to death. But then he said it was an accident and was like, this is, you know, I just did what she was telling me to do. And eventually more comes out that it's very clear that this was like, he wanted to murder her. He was a past abuser. He had sexually abused other women before. And they found out that he was actually like choking her for 5 to 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It takes a while to strangle
that
someone.
Beyond
to death.
She passed out and then he continued to choke her.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't stop. And then he tried to hide her body and put it in the woods.
I mean, that's applicable to this case too, because we didn't talk about this. I wish we would have.
Talking about it right now.
Yeah. Yeah. This guy strangles her, right? And then he's saying, oh no, it's just an accident.
Yeah.
She consented to it. Whatever, man. You ended up then going and hiding her body and burying it in a place where you were hoping people weren't going to find it. You weren't going to fess up. It had been days that had passed. That to me just screams murder, right?
Right. And that's what's so why I'm disappointed with this particular prosecutor, because they bitched out and didn't go for murder, even though they likely would have been able to, because most people, if you harp that exact statement to an average person, they're going to agree with that. They're going to be like, could it have been that? But wait, no. once she actually died, he buried her in the yard.
Yeah.
Rather than, and again, this is a tad different because she is like asking to be killed.
Right, right, sure.
To achieve that like ultimate sexual fantasy, whereas this, it's a little more clear cut in this other case. But yeah,
even,
but
even then, in the eyes of the law, then, right? You can't consent to why wouldn't he been like context.
I didn't mean to. I was just doing what she called like, the way he reacted. Yeah.
Also with like strangling someone and then you call emergency services being like, oh my God, this person's unresponsive. We were just messing around, right. I swear. Like that would at least be more convincing than you buried her body, man. You did not reach out to the police. This is like, clearly something was going on. I don't know about that case though, but did he call the police afterwards? No. Yeah. Oh, yeah. See, I mean, it is.
No, and he, they had the whole thing on CCTV, every movement he had.
Holy shit.
And like the thing about him was after he murdered her in the early morning hours, he got on his phone and was like looking at porn. Good. He started looking up searches like hot as fire. Started looking up like this foresty region in New Zealand. This was in New Zealand. And they fucking went full blown murder and they convicted his ass.
They did?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
good.
He got the longest sentence they have for murder in New Zealand.
Good.
And definitively proved that, no, he murdered her.
Yeah.
Even though they still don't know exactly what happened in that room. But based on all this other evidence that they had and, of course, the medical examination, they're able to determine that he was leaning on her throat for a while.
Yeah. Also, most choke, I mean, this also, I saw a lot of PSAs while researching this, and a lot of them were saying things like, learn if you're
safe words and stuff.
Safe words, and then how to actually physically choke someone without it, you inadvertently causing them to go unconscious or killing them, because there is like kind of a technique to it. But I feel like most of us must like kind of inherently know the threshold for when it's becoming dangerous.
Well, how many people participate in this, you think?
Yeah, I'd have probably, I don't know. It's
probably a fair amount of people. And I feel like in like these types of cases and deaths, you don't hear about it all that often.
Right, yeah. Right?
Like they happen, but it's not in the numbers you would think if you're being choked out like that. So I think that lends credibility to what you just said.
Right. It's not happening.
Probably a way that people do it safely and safe words and like have that consensual conversation with their partner and they know how to, and in the event something does go wrong, they call an ambulance, you know,
right.
And start trying to resuscitate the person, not figure out, oh damn, they're dead now. Where am I going to dispose of their body and attempt to cover up the death so that I don't get in trouble.
Exactly.
And I think that's your admission of guilt.
Shouldn't that tell you everything? Yeah.
So in this case, I think they should have went a little bit harder than they did, for sure.
Yeah.
They wimped out by going with the most, just a clear cut voluntary manslaughter, especially since this guy's also into the child shit too. Fuck him.
God. Yeah. 6.5 years,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, that's nothing. You know this motherfucker would have gotten out and started doing this shit again.
Yep.
He should have gotten 15 years just for the child material.
Yeah.
Yeah, let us know your thoughts, though. I'm curious to see what the audience thinks of this. If you had heard of this case before, and where do you kind of stand with it? And it is definitely a different one for us, and that's saying something, because I feel like we've ventured into every dark corner of the internet at this point in one way or another. But yeah, this was a new one for us. But yeah, we're going to wrap things up there today. We'll see you guys next week with another one. Till then, lights out,
everybody.